Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.
Welcome back to the IL Preps Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined by Ty Zanders, and we are talking about Wave 3, the Under Armour All-America selection. Ty, we now have 33 players in the game, 11 more new names to discuss that were released on Monday, April 30th. Before we dive into that, a few quick updates from the world of high school lacrosse. One of the big results from the past 7 days, Brunswick edging out Hill Academy. It's going to create some tension at the top of the Under Armour Inside Lacrosse National High School Power Rankings.
Yeah, we're lucky enough to get Dan Arestia up there. I know there was a lot of fog during that game that made it tough to watch both in person and on live stream. But yeah, just a total statement by the Bruins, and I think they're going to make things pretty interesting these next few weeks. They have a couple solid tests coming up that I think will help us kind of figure out who to put number one. I love Culver right now, but you can't not have Brunswick in the discussion for that top spot. I will be seeing them in person next week. Pretty fired up for that to get a better sense of what they do and get to that campus the first time in a couple of years. So should be fun to follow over the next few weeks.
Certainly a lot of action in the world of high school lacrosse. Make sure to check out insidelacrosse.com/highschool for all of the latest high school scores. We continue to update and populate that. It is a big task, and we ask for all the folks involved to make sure that their team's schedules and results are up to date. But Ty, like I mentioned, news of the day. The next 11 selections, Wave 3 of the Under Armour All-America game, which is set for June 30th at Homewood Field. Game gets underway. The boys' game gets underway at 8 p.m. That'll be live on ESPNU. We've already talked about waves 1 and 2 on the podcast, so if you missed it, go back and check them out. We'll start with the attack for wave 3. Xander Dixon, keeping along that Brunswick theme. He was great against Hill. What can you say about the future Virginia player?
Yeah, I think that he has a really intriguing game, and I feel like he's improved pretty steadily throughout the years. And when you think about the youngest brother in a lacrosse family, I mean, David Dixon was a tremendous player at Bucknell, and Marshall Dixon was a 2015 grad from Brunswick and is a junior at Bucknell right now. You always feel good about the youngest kid. And Xander is someone I really enjoy watching, and certainly a dynamic player. I like his vision. I think he has some of the best hands I've seen from an American. So he's just good for a few fakes and fancy finishes in close. And if you look at his game and you think about what UVA has, he could be that third or fourth attackman, that complementary piece with Laviano and another Fairfield County guy and Michael Krause. But I could also see him running out of the box. You could also see UVA using him in a four attackman set. Who knows? But I know that he's too talented to keep off the field initially. He was committed to Penn originally. I think he flipped in October 2016. And as we mentioned, just a ridiculous showing against Hill. I mean, to put 7-1 on them says a lot about his game and the way he performs in big moments. But yeah, really impressed this game. And, you know, like what he does, he's been really steady for the Eclipse Club program. Program I've seen several times over the years, and he's another kid from Brunswick that will be going to UVA.
Previously, we had broken these down by position, but I want to stick with the Brunswick theme because there was another WIC player selected, another Bruin selected in this wave, that being goalie Patrick Birkinshaw, another Brunswick player heading to University of Virginia.
So I will get a little bit of flack here, because I was so high on Alex Rode, but Birkinshaw's up there, and I think he'll make the competition even more interesting. You know, as it was in the fall and spring in Charlottesville, he's a big kid, and if you look at his skill set, I mean, it's obviously a goalie's priority to stop the ball, but if you watch the way this kid plays out of the goal and the way he clears, you have to think that skill set will fare very well in Charlottesville with the way that system, you know, goes. So, I'm excited to see what he can do live next week, and excited to see, you know, what he adds, UVA is not really known for redshirting kids, but who knows? Maybe they want him for an extra year, and I'm not 100% sure, but I also would not be shocked if they do not take a keeper in the 2019 class because of Birkinshaw's skill set and talent level, and you know, same goes for Rowe. Been pretty impressed with him. Not his best day against Notre Dame, but yeah, the competition should be pretty strong. I mean, Birkinshaw is around 6'3". I think Kip Turner will clean up his technique a little bit. But yeah, he's a stud. And if you look at what he's done the last 2 years, he's lost one game. So the leadership's qualities are pretty strong up there in Greenwich.
Swinging back around to the attack, John Lombardi sticking with the Connecticut area prep school programs. From Salisbury, heading to Cornell. What can you say about Lombardi?
I think that his versatility and toughness jumps out. He was committed to Michigan as a freshman, got a pretty substantial scholarship as a face-off middie, and now he is a hard-nosed attackman. Just you know, pretty. I don't know the best way to describe it. I don't want to say a bowling ball or a fire hydrant, but he is 5'8", 180, tough as nails, definitely stout, and looks like a linebacker or fullback. So he's going to Cornell. I think he fits the Big Red pretty well, and another kid that, yeah, Cornell has a lot of strong attackmen. So I wouldn't say it's tough to see the field, because just like Dixon at UVA, he's so skilled that you have to get him on the field. He provides so much burst and energy to an offense that you got to get him on there somehow. So I would expect them to maybe run him at midfield initially and then go over to attack eventually. But really enjoy watching John for Sweet Lax and for Salisbury. I know he missed some early games for Salisbury, but is hitting his stride right now. But yeah, this kid's a stud, and I expect pretty big things from him.
The third attackman picked in Wave 3, George Wachalens from Connecticut High School on Long Island, heading to Maryland.
Another kid with football background. I know he's had a couple all-county performances on the gridiron a couple of years, and I think he's four-time all-county, or will be four-time all-county in lacrosse. So he's a quarterback lefty. You look at him, and he's almost – he looks funny in pads. Like, he has these big shoulder pads that just jump out from across the field, and he's deceptive. He's deceptively athletic and just so smart back there. He's put up big numbers for Connecticut. And I just kind of like his skill set as a lefty and put up something like probably 10 goals at Under Armour and caught my eye for a team that struggled otherwise. But he was that constant presence for them. And another guy that should be interesting to see what he can do, knowing what Maryland loses, you know, an offensive leader in Connor Kelly, and they lose Rotans. I think Wachalens will compete with some other guys like Kyle Long, who we had earlier in the Under Armour selection process. So, yeah, no shortage of talent in College Park, and George will add to that.
Moving to the midfield, Garrett Ledman, originally a Duke commit, originally a Navy commit, switched to Duke last October. You had an opportunity to see him in person early last week, in a game against LaSalle. What can you say about the DeMatha midfielder?
He's big. I mean, that's what catches your eye, and that's he's big, but he's not good just because he's big. I think that I don't want to compare him to Paul Rabel, but you think of a big hulking midi at DeMatha, and you think of Paul, and Garrett is every bit of 6'3" and over 200 pounds. I know he dropped 7 goals in Spalding in March, and he didn't have his best day against LaSalle. I think that was last week, but you know, he does a lot. They struggled on the faceoff X, and they bumped him up to take a couple draws, and just to see that he's well-rounded in that sense is pretty impressive. But over the years, I've watched him with a plethora of club teams. I know he's originally a Black Wolf kid, but played some with FCA, played some with Dukes. He was everywhere. I think he was at Under Armour as well. And, you know, you want to see a player's body of work, and I think Ledman has a really strong one. He's asked to do so much for the Stags and is at every event under the sun and just crushing it. Just a big, powerful alley dodger, and I like his skill set, and it'll certainly fit well with what the Blue Devils do. They have a ton of middies in that stable, but he's another one that will probably see the field, whether it's two-way or is D-middy initially or off or on offense. But, yeah, he brings so much to the table in terms of mismatches, and you know, it'll be fun to see what he can do.
Moving along, Nick Loring from Noble and Grinnell High School. Nobles, as it's called, in Massachusetts, heading to Harvard.
Yeah, I saw him, I think it was two springs ago for Nobles, you know, and catch up with the ISL people as much as possible, and they always speak very positively about Loring, both as a player and just as a kid, a human being. And his brother right now, I think we had him as an Under Armour All-American, if I'm not mistaken, in 2016. So, you know, it'll be fun to see George and Nick together, and definitely a lot of former Under Armour All-Americans for the Crimson, and Nick's another one of those kids that I wouldn't say he has like the same game as Ledman, but just a prototypical alley dodger, really skilled shooter on the run. And yeah, I mean, he had a really good summer 2 years ago, and I didn't see him as much in 2017, but just brings it from the outside. And, you know, they need that. They need a bit of a punch in the midfield.
A standout for the Ancients team last summer at Committed Academy was evaluated and rated out at an 83. And the notes say, a great example of a typical Nobles kid, toughness to spare, an angry shot, and a midfielder's work ethic in an attackman's body. That's high praise. A solid wing dodger. Could probably use a few more tricks in his bag, but definitely shows out as a versatile prospect. Moving along, Matt Magnan, Fox Lane High School, heading to Syracuse, plays for Primetime, another player who's been on the radar for a really long time.
Yeah, I mean, he was the first like a sophomore All-American in Section 1, which is a pretty big deal, knowing how much talent has come out of that area, that Hudson Valley, Westchester area. And we've seen a lot of Magnan playing with Primetime. They've been in the Isle Invitational before. It seems like he was really one of the first kids to jump out to me in the fall of 2014. That was my first fall with recruiting rundown and hitting the November circuit pretty hard. And Magnan was just this 6'3" beast that just murdered corners and you know, really impressed, you know, as a lefty, but could really bring it with his right. And there wasn't much of a drop off between his left and right. So I like what he does. I want to see him become a little bit more consistent and, you know, more of a workhorse. But I think that he's dynamic and gets the cage. And, you know, there's so much talent at Syracuse right now in terms of underclassmen. You have to feel pretty good. If these freshmen pan out, you have to feel pretty good about the youth in your first two lines for the Orange. They have a couple good middies coming in and a couple good middies right now between Curry and Dordovic and Quinn, and then Trimpoli's a sophomore. So I'm really intrigued to see how they use those guys and if anyone bumps down to attack. Maybe Curry, I know he played some in high school for Garrett Hall. But yeah, I mean, the rich get richer in terms of offensive weapons.
And the last midfielder from the group, Chase Scanlon from IMG, originally a Buffalo native, going to Loyola. I had an opportunity to talk to Chase last week and inform him of his selection. And one of the coolest anecdotes from this process that I've experienced, he said it's been a dream of his to play in this game since watching Zed Williams playing it as a seventh grader, given the role model that Zed had been for him.
Yeah, and that's been one of the most intriguing, you know, most fun parts of my job here and really my time covering recruiting, is notifying these kids. They're selected as Under Armour All-Americans, and just there's this like long pause while it sinks in, and they're just so pumped to hear it. I mean, to hear that story about Scanlon and hear about some other instances that my colleagues here at IL have brought up about notifying these players, really cool to see. And I think with Chase, I watched him in February down in Dallas, and he went off. And I think when I think about his game, it's something that is so unique to the Patriot League and that program. You've been watching Loyola for so long. I've been watching Loyola for a long time. And they don't really have any natives. You don't really see that a whole lot in that league. And I think that I I will eat crow if he's not a first line middie, and I think that he's a surefire 2-3-4 time all conference contributor because of his skill set and his playmaking ability. He plays with flair, and I cannot wait to see him and Pat Spencer together, and you know, savvy finishers like Lindley and Olmstead. Scanlon is always good for a nice little flip pass or backhander or BTB, and I think that he really brings it in the two-man game. So he's a player that we can probably expect will want to put on a show in the Under Armour game and try and get back to that Sports Center top 10 moment. So look out for that, and just pumped to see him play.
Moving down low, obviously in Wave 1 we talked about the uncommon number of defensemen and long poles that have been picked. I believe through the first two waves, we had 7 selections among long sticks. 2 more added to the docket. Tanner Hay from Victor heading to Albany.
He's a big boy. I love his leadership qualities, and I think he won MVP honors in the state championship game. So he kind of brings that. He's an elder statesman for Victor, and another guy who I'll be very shocked if Albany does not use him as an everyday starter. Got a nice reach, really good feet. I really like what he can do, and it was tough defensively to make some of these decisions because we did have 5 kids in that first wave, and if, I think 2 in the next wave. So some would say it's a little top heavy defensively, but hey, if you look at his profile, in many ways it was a no brainer, and I like the way he projects in the America East for Albany.
Victor is 7-1, coming off of a 5-3 victory over Pittsford, and I talked to him that night right after the game, and I was like, "Yeah, it feels right to be picking a defenseman on a night in which you guys held your opponent to 3 goals." Moving along, the last defenseman from Wave 3, Frank Marinello from Chaminade, also heading to Duke.
Another really strong profile. I think he was one of the first kids that jumped off defensively as a freshman and then continued that into the summer. He is just a stalwart for Team 91 and Chaminade, and I just like his approach. I like his approach and just how hard he slides, just jams down on player sticks, and is just disruptive, and another guy who has that reach, has that range, just would eat attackmen alive on a regular basis. And I've watched Chaminade a couple times on film, and he's at the end of every play and kind of creating possession and just really the glue as a leader and as a guy that can really erase the opponent's number one attackman out of that game for the most part.
Ty, we started this podcast by talking about a pair of Brunswick players heading to Virginia. We're going to end with a pair of Chaminade players heading to Duke. The other goalie selected in Wave 3, Andrew Bonafide.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely improved steadily. I noticed him right off the bat in the November circuit because he was stopping everything and just looked so poised. And I think it was the 2016 summer for Under Armour. I thought he was the best keeper there. And if you can stop shots at that event from the best of the best, then, you know, you have to feel pretty good about the way that kid projects the next level. And Duke will probably need that. They are taking 2 goalies in that class. They got a flip from Garrett Smith, who was going to Notre Dame. And, you know, in the 11th hour, he flipped to Duke. Got in on his own, will join his brother Brad Smith for Brad's senior year for the Blue Devils, but Bonafide is still one of the jewels of that class and should be a starter. Another strong lacrosse family. I mean, Sam Bonafide was an Under Armour All-American and has had a great career, a well-rounded career with Princeton, and Bonafide is another just a great kid, a shot stopper, great out of the cage, and just steady.
All right, Ty, that'll do it for Wave 3 analysis of the Under Armour All-American. Wave 4 will be announced in 2 weeks. We've got our eye on May 14th, and then we still have to decide whether we're going to include the breakdown of the rosters with Wave 4 or whether we're going to do that separately a couple days later. We're just going to leave you in suspense on that one, just like we're going to leave you in suspense with who's going to be number one tomorrow when the rankings come out. But in the meantime, really fired up by all the submissions and nominations we've gotten for players. Very tough decision with the last 11 inclusions. And we appreciate you, as always, checking out the IL Preps podcast. If you like what you hear, subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review, and hit us up on Twitter at IL Preps, at Ty Zanders, at Terrence Foy. We will be back with you next week.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.